I don't want to be a hypocrite. I found that graphic online and I thought, that's kind of eerily creepy. But the more I stared at it, I started thinking, that's exactly what a hypocrite is. Most people think that a hypocrite is someone who fails to live up to what they believe. I say, this is what is important in my life, but then I find other things to do with my life. That's hypocritical. I say, I love Jesus, but then I act in ways that totally show that I have no respect for Jesus. And the reality is, when I say that word, those words, I don't want to be a hypocrite, if that's true, all of us are hypocrites, aren't we? Do any of us live this perfectly? Do any of you have a belief that you can honestly say that from the moment you said you believe it, that you have 100% never done anything that violated that belief? I can't. So that means I'm a hypocrite. So the problem is that hypocrisy makes us kind of feel guilty about things, right? I mean, I say I believe this, and then I don't do what I say I believe, and then inevitably somebody makes me feel guilty because they come back and they call me. So I really have a couple of choices here when it comes to not wanting to be a hypocrite. I can constantly lower the standard so it matches my behavior. Okay, that would work, wouldn't it? If I say this is what I believe, and I can't live up to it, if I just keep making what I believe a little bit lower and a little bit lower, and I keep lowering the stick until I can jump over it, I don't have to be a hypocrite. Or I have to admit that there is a standard that I didn't create, and I just cannot perfectly keep it. It means that I am looking for a standard that is not my standard, it is somebody else's standard, it is what I think, in this case, God wants me to do. And then I just kind of have to trust for some grace. Now, if you've been out in our culture very lately, I had this conversation this moment. Our culture has drastically changed over the past 3 or 4 years. And here's what we're finding out. The world lowers the standard. The world says, it's okay, we'll just put the bar a little bit lower and we'll keep lowering the bar. And that way everybody can be what they want to be. But the church can't work that way. The church has to come to the conclusion, we confess that we fall short. I am a hypocrite. I do struggle with this stuff. I do sometimes really mess things up. And this is where those concepts of grace and mercy have to come in. But all of this talk about what it means to be a hypocrite feeds really well into our psalm today. We're going to be in Psalm 95. And what we really say sometimes is, I don't go to church. I don't want to go to church today because my heart wasn't in it. Have you ever woke up and had one of those moments? I'm just not feeling it today. I've just got other things in my life that have bumped the priority. I'm just not with it. And so I don't want to come, because if I come, then I'm a hypocrite. You know, she's missed the definition, right? You're a hypocrite whether you show up or not. Okay? Because you are saying, I believe this is important. So hypocrisy is there no matter what. But here's the ironic thing is, we don't say this when it comes to exercise. Has anyone ever sat in their house and said, well, you know, I really should exercise, but I got to wait until I get in shape before I can exercise because I don't want to be a hypocrite. Why does that logic not work? Because unless I exercise, I never get to get in shape, and therefore I'm always going to be looking at this idea that I'm always going to be a hypocrite when it comes to my gym membership. I pay for my gym membership. I have things that I'm supposed to do, but I just don't want to do it. But when it comes to exercise, here's what we figure out. You don't wait until you want it, okay? You don't exercise, you don't begin an exercise program because you feel like it. I have never met anyone who says, yeah, I'm going to do this because I'm just excited about an exercise program. That's not how it's supposed to work. You do it because you looked in the mirror, you saw something about your life, and you decide, I need this. Maybe your need was defined because you went to a doctor and they stuck one of those little cuffs on you. They checked your blood pressure. Your blood pressure is too high. Or they pricked your finger and they said, you know what, you've got cholesterol issues. You've got health issues. If you don't start exercising, then it's going to impact you. But for the most part, that's not why we start exercising. It's because at some point we put some piece of clothing on our body and we stood in front of a mirror and we're like, yuck, I got to do something about this. So I need it, and so I begin doing the exercise, and eventually you see the results from your exercise, you see the results from your efforts, and eventually your desire catches up with, your desire catches up with all of your discipline. But it doesn't start out that way. You have to work at it. You have to be disciplined before you ever want to be disciplined. And when it comes to Psalm 95, we're going to talk today about worship being spiritual training. Now, do you think of worship this way? Think about it. When you come to church, where's the first place that most people that start attending church, where do they start at? A worship service. You don't usually walk in off the street and say, hey, will you give me a job? I need to serve. And you do not walk in off the street and you usually start off with, hey, I'd like to be part of a Bible school. You come and you begin to get disciplined in our habits here because of worship. And sometimes we need to realize the moment you least feel like worshiping is when you need to do it. The moment that it just looks too hard is what you need to do. So as we become to Psalm 95, we're going to look at this idea of not just worship, but what it means to live worship in my life. How do I develop this spiritual training? And this psalm starts out with two come statements. Two modes of worship, two movements of your heart. It's a reminder that worship is not a solo act. It's communal. I've heard people say, well, I can worship all by myself. You can. But we talked about this last week. That is not how worship is supposed to work. Worship is supposed to begin in communal and work out into our lives, not the other way around. When we come together, we turn our faces toward God. When you're sitting here in this building, hopefully you've put pause on the rest of the world. So let's talk about these come statements. And the first thing we get is come before his presence. Verses 1 and 2. Come let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song. This isn't a come as a suggestion. It's not would you come. It's not come because you have time to come. It's come, and it's really more like a let's go. Let's get this started. It's time to do this. It's a procession, but it's not the procession like we think at graduation. You know, do, 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 where it's a slow, methodical thing. Have you ever been to a football game? And you're setting up in the stands. The game is not started yet. You can see the team gathering, the home team gathering down at the corner, and the cheerleaders come out and they wave that banner and they put it across there, and the football team comes running out of the tunnel and they break through that banner and they're headed to the sidelines. That's how we're supposed to come into worship. I know you're scared. What is that going to look like next? It's a metaphor, okay? I'm not really going to hang banners and start yelling, let's go, but you do understand those people have something in common. They're moving together. Have you ever seen anybody come out and then try to run back against the football team? What's going to happen? You're probably going to get somebody injured, right? They're moving together. They all have a same goal destination. They all have something that they want to accomplish. They all have something that they are celebrating. You see, that's what worship is. Celebrating on the way we meet God. When I choose to take that hypocrisy idea and say, I just need to stay home because my heart's not in it. And what you're really saying is, you know what? I got nothing for you, God. I got nothing to bring into your presence. I got nothing that feels good. Now, I just want to make you understand something. This is supposed to be loud worship. Did you catch those verbs? Singing, shouting, instruments, public praise. 1 Chronicles chapter 15, verse 25 through 28 gives us the ideal picture of this style of worship. So David and the elders of Israel and the commanders of the units of thousands went to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from the house of Adoram-Edom with rejoicing because God had helped the Levites who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Seven bulls and seven rams were sacrificed. Now David was clothed in a robe of fine linen. And they were all, and as were all the Levites who were carrying the ark, as were all the musicians and Kenya, who was in charge of the singing and of the choirs, plural. David also wore a linen ephod. So all of Israel brought up the ark of the covenant of the Lord with shouts, with sounding of rams, horns, and trumpets, and cymbals, and the playing of harps, and the playing of lyres, and harps. Think that was quiet? You realize what this worship style looked like, right? It was a parade. They paraded themselves into God's presence. And you probably needed some earplugs because you had thousands of people singing, cymbals crashing, people shouting. They were rejoicing. And I know what people were thinking. I worship quietly in my heart. Okay. That might be your preferred style of worship, but you do understand. Scripture stretches us. And sometimes we need to praise out loud and loud. Because sometimes things happen when your mouth declares what your heart already believes. Isn't this what we do when we have somebody come into the presence of God for the first time? Except Christ, Romans chapter 10, verse 9. If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. This isn't emotional flow, overflow. This means that your joy is chosen when you worship in this style. We're supposed to choose joy. Pay really close attention to those first two verses. Sing for joy, not because you're joyful. Ooh. So I'm supposed to sing even though I'm not happy? Yes. I'm supposed to sing even though I had a really bad week? Yes. I'm supposed to sing even though I don't know how to sing? Yes. Because Nancy and I, that's the amen chorus right there, because I can't sing. I can't. I have no singing ability whatsoever. But I'm not singing because I want God to make me happy. I'm singing because I'm full of joy. Now, here's the thing we always forget. Joy and sorrow almost are always mixed. It's not always going to be happy moments. You come into this place and maybe you're feeling joyful because you got here. But you know what? You got here, you've got issues. All kind of issues. Things that you come in. The question isn't which emotion is strongest, joy or sorrow. The question is, which one are you going to feed while you're here? I can spend my time in worship trying to focus on all the things that are going wrong in my life, or I can choose my time in worship to focus on God, the one that can fix everything in my life. And then as we're talking here, the psalmist begins to tell us there is a reason we have to take this approach of joy. You see, you choose joy by choosing to remember who God is. We see in Psalm chapter 3, Psalm 95, verses 3 through 5. For the Lord is the great God, the great King, and above all gods. In his hands are the depths of the earth and the mountain. Peaks belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. So that beach that you love so much, where you might have spent part of your summer vacation, you understand, that's his beach. That mountain that you love to stand up on and watch the sunrise, you understand, that's his mountain. The places that we go and the things that we do, you understand, all of this is here because God said, let it be. If we remove God from the equation, it all falls apart. You see, everything people idolize, not just from their land and their vacations, power, wealth, influence, he made it all. So, yes, there is always a reason to rejoice. But there's another reason that we come. I mean, it isn't all about just standing up and having a party, right? We don't want this to become a concert. This isn't so we can come and just have a party or just a celebration. There is also this reverse side of the coin of worshiping through, here's a word we don't hear very often these days, reverence. Psalm 95, verses 6 and 7, the first part of 7 says, come, let us bow down and worship. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker. For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. Now, I do get it. There's a lot of people here. Barry, if I come here and kneel and worship, I'm going to be here a while. Because it's going to take a little while for me to get back up. But it isn't just about kneeling in your body posture. It's about the idea of kneeling in your heart. Earlier, we were loud. Now, it's time to get quiet. Earlier, we celebrated. Now, it's time to humble ourselves. And this is important because in modern churches, our church included, often we want to pick a lane. We want to say either it has to be traditional or contemporary. It has to be upbeat or it has to be kind of somber. You understand that is not the way the psalmist is pointing. This is not charismatic or conservative. The psalmist says, for it to truly be worship, you've got to have both. There has to be an aspect of celebration, but the celebration done in reverence. That makes this just a little bit more difficult. You see, the psalmist says you need loud, but you also have to have love. The psalmist says that you need joyful, but you also have to figure out how to make your joyful reverent. The psalmist says, hey, you have to be willing to celebrate, but you also at the same time have to be willing to surrender. Anybody feel like sometimes you're walking the worship balance beam? How do I strike a balance between these two things? Well, that's a good question. Because worship isn't about your preference. It's about your formation. It's about your focus. You see, when I come into worship, and worship is about what kind of music I enjoy, or what kind of things that make me happy, or what kind of things make church church, you do understand what you're really saying is, what is worship about? Me. Worship is here to make me happy. And the moment that happens, it's no longer worship of God. So we've got our celebration and we've got our reverence, but to make these three pieces work together, there is a word that we like even less, and it's humility. Earlier, we chose joy. Now I'm going to choose humility. So joy is seeing circumstances in light of God. Humility is seeing yourself in light of God. So what is the common thread between the two definitions? You and God. How do you see where you are and how do you see yourself? And now you put them into the presence of God. And sometimes, there you go, sometimes your body helps your soul. Sometimes you have to put your body in the presence of God before your soul will ever arrive. I never thought about it that way until I read this little book that this sermon series came from. Sometimes my body gets here a long time before my soul does. You know that? My body shows up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we're thinking about turning on lights and turning on sound systems, praying that, oh God, look, nothing happened that makes us delay today. We're thinking about making coffee. We're thinking about all those things. My body is here. My soul sometimes doesn't show up till between 9 and 9:30. Sometimes after we've done all the work and we sat here and we chatted for a while and we got around the table here and we prayed, my soul kind of shows up after that. My heart gets into this well after my body ever shows up. See, sometimes getting your soul here means that you have to start with your body, which means sometimes you have to hug someone. Sometimes you have to reach out and connect with someone. Sometimes you have to come and kneel. You have to appreciate the idea. Earlier when we were celebrating, it was God over creation. Now it is God over us. That's a little harder because we need to understand he is shepherd. We are sheep. Have you ever thought about this? What would happen if the shepherd decided to take a seat and said, okay, sheep, you decide what we're going to do next? How do you think that would turn out? Probably a dead flock, because the sheep are going to eat until all the grass is gone. The sheep have no ability to set up a defense mechanism for themselves. The sheep could do committee voting, but their voting would always be about, what do I want right this moment? Instead, the shepherd has to look down the field, across the field, over the field. And sometimes they have to decide what's best for the sheep, even when the sheep don't understand. You see, everything we have comes from our shepherd. And sheep don't get to lead the shepherd, and that humbles us. When I have to come into his presence and I get the idea that I don't get a vote, I don't get a say, I come into God's presence and whatever God asks me to do, that is what I am supposed to focus my life on. Which brings us to this other aspect of worship. Something, again, we don't usually associate with worship. Yeah, we associate celebration. We associate reverence. Sometimes we get to the idea of humility, but did you understand that worship is about obedience? Today, if only you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did at Meribah, as you did in the day of Massa, in the wilderness where your ancestors tested me. They tried me, though they had seen what I did. For 40 years, I was angry with that generation. I said, they are peoples whose hearts are gone astray. They have not known my ways. So I declared an oath on my anger. They shall never enter my rest. That's kind of harsh. God looked at the Israelites who refused to obey, and he said, fine, I'm going to let you wander in the wilderness for 40 years. There will be no rest. Jesus echoed this thought when he quoted Isaiah in Mark chapter 7, verses 6 to 7. These people, now he's talking about religious people again. He isn't talking about pagans. He's talking about those who said, we got this all figured out. These people have honored me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They talk a good game, but somehow they just aren't living up to what they say. They're not obedient in worship. They're worshiping when it's convenient, when they feel like it. They aren't celebrating in worship unless they're celebrating themselves. They've forgotten the idea that you are stepping into God's presence when you worship. Do you appreciate that? When we come together in communion, in corporate worship, when we gather around the table in communion, you understand all of that. You are stepping into the presence of the one who created the universes. You have a personal, private audience with God. How do I fix this? How do I become obedient in my worship? How about I just give you some quick ones here? Don't delay. Make it today. Don't make your obedience in worship a tomorrow. Not when life slows down. Not when you feel like you're ready to worship. The only time you can do worship is now. We delay things that we don't think matters. Isn't that how it works? You ever watch a child when they eat their plate of food? What goes first? What they like. And then they begin to systematically work their way around the plate, and hopefully they're thinking, I'm going to be full by I get to the yucky stuff. That's the logic. You understand? That's kind of how we treat worship sometimes. I'll do all the things that matter to me, and eventually I'll get around to it. But you understand delayed obedience is dangerous obedience, because eternity hinges on our willingness to be obedient. Don't avoid. If you hear his voice. To hear scripture means that you have to obey. Do you really want to hear God's voice, though? Because hearing means surrender. God does not speak just because he likes to hear his own voice. He speaks because he wants to transform your life. He wants you to be obedient. Don't resist. What did the psalmist say? Don't harden your hearts. There are only two responses to God. You receive or you resist. There's no in the middle. Either you receive what God is handing you, or you resist it in your life and you begin to build barriers between you and God. And you know what happens when you do resistance, right? That's where hardness begins to set in. I'm going to resist God, so I'm going to begin to build this wall, and the wall keeps building, and the wall keeps building, and the wall keeps building. And then eventually we're kind of like, who needs church? Who needs God? The issue becomes in the fact that we built the barrier that disconnected ourselves from the connection of God. And then we can do whatever we want. We harden our hearts. Don't test God. Israel tested God in the wilderness, not because they needed clarity, because they demanded control. That's kind of an interesting thought. When Israel looked at them and said, God, we need manna. Give us what we want to eat. God, we need meat. God, we need water. God, we need this. We kept calling out to God, and they weren't looking because they needed to see more of God, to see who God was. What they wanted was control of God. That's what it means to deny worship. We want to be in control. Testing God means I will pay when, God, you perform something for me. Talk about hypocrisy. We call him Lord, and then we look at God and say, prove it. If you look at God that way, that's not considered faith. That's called negotiation. And the last time I checked, God's not a negotiator. God is the Lord of all. And then the one that I think is very important. Don't miss the rest. You understand when you come into here, you're able to come in however you are, you want to be. You want to come in here broken? Bring your brokenness. You want to come in here struggling? Bring your struggleness. You want to come in with your loneliness? Bring your loneliness. Bring it here, bring it before God, and God says, I will give you rest. Jesus doesn't say, mail me your burdens, and I will give you rest. He doesn't say, text me your burdens, and I will give you rest. He doesn't say, write down your burdens on a piece of paper and hang them on your refrigerator, and I will give you rest. What's the verse say? Come to me. With your burdens. And then, and only then, can I give you rest. If you decide to take your burdens and hold on to them for yourself, there is absolutely, positively nothing God can do with those burdens, because you wrapped your hands around them way too tight. This worship displayed in Psalm 95 moves us from joy, humility, to obedience. And finally, I can take a breath. I can breathe. I can rest. But you know what? I still don't want to be a hypocrite. It's not hypocrisy to obey when you don't feel like it. It's maturity. Ooh. So I just kind of have to grow up a little bit. It's not hypocrisy to obey when you don't feel like it. It's maturity. See, that means when you don't feel holy, you still have to worship. You worship so your heart can be shaped. You don't wait to feel humble before you kneel. You kneel so humility can grow. You don't wait to feel obedient. You obey so your heart doesn't harden. It's an interactive moment, this thing that we call worship. What I'm hoping you're going to take away from this is so when you don't feel like worshiping, that may be the moment you absolutely positively need to worship the most. Because worship puts you in the presence of God.